drift away. He grabbed hold of the ladder and climbed up as slowly and as carefully and as quietly as he could. He rolled over the guardrail and onto the teak deck in his bare feet, winced along with the fresh burst of pain in his shoulder, and held his waterlogged but dependable Glock out in front of him. Carefully, he moved to the companionway to descend to the lower decks of the darkened yacht. The first two bodies were at the top of the stairs, two black men in combat uniforms, bullet wounds in the chest. The men didn't look like they were Sudanese Navy, but that was no surprise. The Sudanese Navy was so small, and the mission of the day, checking and rechecking every floating object off its coast, so large, that it was very possible the GOS Army just co-opted boats and boaters to ferry soldiers out to all the yachts and freighters and fishing boats to board and search. Next to their bodies were wire-stocked Kalashnikovs. Court wanted to pick one up, but was worried about making noise while doing so. Blood smeared the mahogany of the companionway steps. Court followed it down, his pistol at the ready. He entered the lower saloon and saw the carnage in the soft green light of a fish tank's glow against the wall. Two more black men dead, and one white man flat on his back in the middle of the floor, with his feet towards Gentry and the staircase. He was unarmed, his chest was bloody. But he was not dead. Court flipped on the overhead light of the lower saloon, keeping his weapon trained on the wounded man. He called out to him from across the room.
Zack? Know why they call it a sucking chest wound?
Hightower asked without looking toward Gentry's direction. His voice was weak. Court nodded slowly and answered,
'Cause it sucks.
Zack nodded sleepily. His right arm was heavily bandaged both above and below the elbow from where he'd been shot 2 days earlier.
What happened?
Asked Gentry.
Fucking backup gun. You'd think I'd have learned my lesson after you popped me with that Derringer back in 06.
Court looked again at the two men at the foot of the stairs. Both had shotguns by their bodies, but a small automatic handgun also lay next to one of the men's hands. The man appeared clearly dead now, but Court shot him in the back of the neck anyway, and then slipped his Glock back into his hip bag.
Whose boat is this?
Don't know. The GOS has boarded everything they can up and down the coast. Pulled a lot of people into Port Sudan, trying to find someone with knowledge of the president's kidnapping. I figured if I got on board one of the empty yachts, the GOS goons wouldn't come back and check them again. There was no reason for these dudes to be here. I figured they came back to loot it, and we just all got unlucky to bump into each other.
What about the minisub?
Hightower looked Gentry over through thin eye slits for several seconds.
I scuttled it. Denny's orders. I was going to use this boat to get down to Eritrea.
Court regarded his former team leader for several seconds. He said,
I can stop the bleeding, stabilize you. Get us out of here.
No thanks.
Suit yourself. You're going to die if you don't get some help.
There will be a GOS naval gunboat on top of us in a few minutes. The pilot of the skiff that brought these guys is probably on the horn to the Navy already.
Then I'd better get busy. I'll patch you up. But before I do anything, I want some answers from you.
Give it a rest, Court.
Why was I burned? Who put out the chute on sight? What the hell did I do wrong?
When the gunboat gets here, they aren't going to board us. They are going to blow the living hell out of this prissy yacht. All that sexy Court, Gentry, gray man, faggot, ninja shit isn't going to help you when their deck guns open up.
I thought you wanted me dead.
Hey, it's not what I want. It's my job. If you put a pistol in my hand right now, I'll shoot you. But I don't guess that's gonna happen. So maybe you'll take a little professional advice and go for a swim. This yacht might be able to do 25 knots. A Sudanese coastal patrol boat can run 35. Chase us down in no time.
Court wasn't listening. He wanted answers.
Who burned me? Was it Matt Hanley?
Zack's eyes were glassy, but they rolled in frustration nonetheless.
I don't know. Was it Lloyd?
Zack's brows furrowed now. He looked up.
Who the fuck is Lloyd?
Court's shoulders slumped, then shrugged.
That's what I said.
Chapter 49.
Zack, listen. You aren't too far gone. I can treat you. You can walk away from this. Just tell me who put the hit out on me and why. Fuck it, Six. I ain't walking and I ain't talking. What the hell is wrong with you? I'm a good soldier, Cord. My orders are to make you dead. Not to make you dead unless you can save me, at which point my mission is no longer valid. Look, man, you're a good guy. I'm rooting for you here, I really am. But I'm not lifting a finger to help you out. Can't do it. It would go against my op orders. You are fucking crazy.
Zack smiled. Gentry could see the pain on his face.
I just do my job. More sons of bitches should do their jobs. No offense, Violator.
Damn it, Zack! Cort shouted it in frustration. He stood there over his former boss, thought for a long moment, and then left the saloon and ran up two levels to the cockpit of the ship. Here he found a first aid kit. In seconds he was back, and he knelt down next to Sierra One. Zack turned his head slowly to face him.
What the hell are you doing?
You know what I'm doing. You are an asshole, but I can't just stand here and just let you die. Gentry ripped open Zack's shirt, exposed the wound. It was small, 2 inches below his right nipple. Cort knew the bullet would have gone through the lung. He reached under Zack to feel for an exit wound.
You patch me up and I'll kill you.
No, you won't. Hightower looked up at the ceiling with his half-masked eyes and shook his head slowly in disbelief.
You are a terrible judge of character, Cort. Tell me about it.
5 minutes later, Gentry had Hightower stabilized, at least for the time being. There was no exit wound, which meant there was a bullet or fragments of a bullet somewhere in his damaged chest cavity. Cort used a folded cover from a magazine from the bookcase and duct tape from the aid kit to create a valve over the chest wound that would allow air to escape from Hightower's lungs when he breathed out, but not allow air into his chest cavity when he breathed in. It was all he could do at the moment. Then Cort left Zack and returned two flights up to the helm of the ship. Within minutes, he turned all the systems on, ignored most everything except the engines and the compass and the wheel and the autopilot. He ran down to the deck and checked to make sure the anchor had not been lowered. He was sure there was some way to check from the helm, but he figured eyeballing it would be faster than trying to figure out which computer monitor displayed that nugget of information. He refrained from turning on any lights. He wanted to move as stealthily towards international waters as an 80-foot luxury yacht possibly could. He knew he would not hit a shipping lane for some time, but he hoped that any civilian sea traffic out there in the dark had radar on board, because Cort did not know how to operate that particular function of the big multifunction display at the center of the mahogany and brass helm, and he did not want a collision with some other boat. Cort pushed the throttle gently, and the big boat surged forward. When the craft reached 20 knots, he set the autopilot to hold the present course, and then he ran back downstairs. Cort entered the lower saloon to find Hightower crawling on his side, halfway under a table that folded out from the wall. Cort followed the wounded man's eyes to a titanium snub-nose revolver on the floor against the wall, just within Hightower's grasp. It was the same gun Zack had pressed to Gentry's forehead in St. Petersburg. Slowly, Hightower's left arm crept out on the floor, reaching for the gun. Cort did not have to hurry. He just stepped across the floor and kicked the pistol away. Gentry said,
I don't think your heart was in that attempt.
Zack nodded, his eyes closed again.
My heart has other pressing matters to attend to at the moment.
He winced with pain.
Pulmonary pneumothorax. Air pressure in the chest cavity is stopping my heart.
If you promise to stop trying to kill me for a minute, I can help you.
No promises,
Zack said, but he rolled back onto his back and cried out in pain as he did so. His breath was shallow and labored. Cort quickly flipped open his knife, found a spot between the second and third ribs on the right side of Sierra One's chest, and then punched a shallow hole through the skin and muscle. Zack cried out. Immediately, air escaped from the hole with a slight whistling sound. Cort went to the fish tank in the corner, pulled some rubber tubing and a filter out of the water, and returned to his patient. He slid the tube in the fresher of the two chest wounds, stuck the filter in the open end, and laid it on the ground next to Zack's arm.
When we get out of this, you and I are going to need most of the antibiotics in the Western world.
Zack coughed. A little blood appeared on his lips.
Seriously, dude. The gunboat will be here any minute. Just where do you think we are going?
Cort sat down next to Zack, exhausted and sore, and sick from the infection in his back. He pulled the satellite phone out of his bag.
Time to kiss a little Russian ass.
Court got through to Sidorenko on the third try.
Hey, Sid, it's Gray. It's done.
Yes, it is all over the news. President Abood is dead. Everyone in Moscow is very pleased.
The body has been found?
Yes, near a resort 60 miles north of Swakin. Very curious.
Court breathed a hesitant sigh of relief.
Yeah, I'll explain everything when I see you. We need to move up the extraction, though. I've got to get out of here immediately.
Do you?
Yes, too much heat to lay low as we originally planned.
Is that so?
Sid's voice held none of his earlier excitement. Gentry sensed trouble.
Yeah, I'm wounded.
Wounded?
Hey, Sid, stop with the questions. Yes, I'm wounded. I need some help.
I'm afraid your benefits package does not include health insurance, Mr. Gray.
Court said nothing. The muscles in his jaw twitched. The Russian mobster continued.
Abood is dead, this I know. But I also know that you did not kill him. He was killed by a sniper while you were trying to protect him, to get him out of the country, to deliver him to the International Criminal Court. You used my operation to gain access to the president in order to take him alive for some other actor.
Shit. Where did you hear that bullshit?
Sid's reply was delivered with a sudden scream, his St. Petersburg accent more pronounced and the words less intelligible.
You take me for a fool? Well, Cortland Gentry Greyman, I am no fool. You can stay there and die for your treachery.
I'm going to kill you, Sid.
You just told me you could not survive without me, and now you make threats about what you will do to me. Ha! You were a dangerous man, Gentry. This is why I liked you. But you're not so dangerous now that you are alone, injured, scared. Not so interesting either. I had a man with a problem. Soon there will be no man and no problem.
Sid laughed as he hung up the phone.
Damn it, said Court.
He dropped the phone on the floor by his side and lay back against the wall of the saloon. The infection was sapping the last of his energy reserves. He thought Hightower was unconscious, but his patient turned his head slowly. With his eyes still closed, he asked,
What did Sid say?
He said in so many words, fuck you.
Zack's dry, cracked lips tightened into a slight smile. His voice was soft.
Damn, dude. Your boss is an asshole. Yeah, who knew? Face it, nobody's coming for us. I'm disavowed, and you're the enemy. We are pretty much the definition of fucked. You can backstroke back to the beach. That's pretty much your only option.
Court reached above him to a small bar and grabbed a water bottle. His back screamed in pain while doing so. He unscrewed the cap and took a few swigs. He poured a few splashes over his head. Distractedly, he drummed his fingers on the water bottle. His legs splayed out on the rising and falling deck. Nothing was said between the two men for a minute. Court felt each second tick. He thought he sensed the boat pulling to the right slightly, but he pushed it out of his mind. The autopilot had been set, so the course should be true.
I'm open to suggestions, one,
Gentry said idly. But there was no reply. Sierra One was unconscious, though breathing better than before with the introduction of the tube to release the air buildup. He'd still likely bleed to death if he didn't get to a hospital soon. Court reached for the first aid pack to see what pain medicine was kept there. He wondered if the Arabs who owned this fancy yacht were the type who abstained from such peccadilloes. Court's eyebrows rose. A sudden thought struck him. Why the hell not? He reached for the phone again and leaned his head back against the teak walls of the cabin. He dialed a number with his thumb and held the phone to his ear. One ring, two rings, five rings. Court looked at his watch. The phone crackled as it was answered. The battery meter showed the device was quickly running out of juice.
Cheltenham Security Services,
said a woman's voice.
Don Fitzroy.
May I ask who's ringing?
Court.
Certainly, sir. One moment.
The pause was brief. The phone was almost dead. It was possible Zack had his own Theria around here somewhere, but Court was too tired to hunt for it. Don Fitzroy, Sir Donald Fitzroy, had been Court Gentry's handler before Gregor Sidorenko. The previous December, the two men had a falling out, and Court vowed to stay away from the English spymaster as long as he lived, even if he became desperate. But desperate events, Court now saw, warranted desperate measures. Fitzroy's low, gruff voice came over the line.
"Well, hello, lad. How are you?"
"Been better, to tell you the truth."
"I'm sorry to hear that. What's wrong?"
"You've been watching the news?"
A nervous chuckle.
"The only news of interest to a man like me is taking place on the western seashore of the Red Sea. I truly hope you're not involved in all that ruckus."
Court sighed. "I guess I'm just about the nucleus of that ruckus." Another pause, then.
"Good Lord. Whispers about say it is the CIA at work. So, you are back with the agency?"
"Unofficially."
"How unofficial?"
"Well, actually, they're trying to kill me."
"Sounds like a bloody unofficial relationship, then. In fact, isn't that the opposite of being with them?"
"It's a bit fucked up, yes."
Instantly, the Englishman said,
"How can I be of service?"
"Just like that? I'm in the shit, Don. You can squeeze me dry if you want. My leverage is non-existent."
"We'll work it out later. You're a man of your word. Let's just try to get you out of there."
Court hesitated, then said, "Do you have any assets at all in the area?"
"I'll need to make some calls. Nothing of my network. But I have colleagues in Eritrea, in Egypt. Maybe by tomorrow afternoon."
"Negative. I can't wait. I have to have something faster."
Don seemed momentarily flummoxed. Court's slightly buoyed spirits sank anew with the delay. He closed his eyes and leaned his head back again. Then he opened them.
"I do have a boat. I'm making 20 knots towards international waters."
"A boat? Well, that's something."
"But the GOS Navy is on the way. I can't outrun them."
Court gave his general coordinates to Fitzroy, who wrote them down hurriedly.
"You must try to dodge the Sudanese."
"If I had something to shoot for, a ship or a boat or even a damn buoy to hang on to, I'd feel a lot better."
Don said,
"There should be a handheld FM beacon on board. Find it straight away. I'll call a friend who's a maritime underwriter at Lloyd's of London. Get a list of every boat, ship, or yacht within 3 hours of you. If I don't know the owner or operator of one of those ships, I will bloody well find someone who does. You go due east from your location. Get out into the sea as fast as you can, as far as you can. When you're in international waters and clear of the Sudanese, sound your distress beacon."
"Understood. Thanks, Don."
"Thank me later. You have a navy to outrun."
Court hung up the phone and ran back to the cockpit to speed up the engines. Chapter 50. Court found the handheld FM distress radio in the cockpit, slid it into his hip bag, and then made his way back to the helm. Here, he pushed the throttles all the way forward. There was less than an hour left until daylight, and Gentry had his bow pointed right where the burnt orange sun would appear. He only hoped he'd be around to see it shine. Suddenly, the cockpit was awash in bright light. Court ducked instinctively, turned in all directions looking for the source of the blinding beam. He found it astern on the starboard side, a spotlight no more than 100 yards away. The twin 12.7mm machine gun of the coastal patrol boat opened up 1 second later, tearing into the cockpit and ripping through mahogany and bronze and glass. Gentry dove to the deck next to the helm, used the deeply waxed teak flooring to slide like a snake towards the stairs to the lower decks. He slid down the stairs face first, his shoulder killing him, but his fear of supersonic metal taking precedence in his priorities. On the main deck, Court waited for a short respite from the near-constant fire and grabbed both rifles dropped by the dead men on the companionway. The weapons were old and poorly maintained. Court knew firing on the gunboat would be extraordinarily reckless, but not firing on it would allow it to come as close as it wanted, shine its spot on the hapless yacht, and rake its machine guns back and forth to its heart's content until the engine stopped and the yacht sank in the black water. Court wasn't going to make it that easy for them. He crawled to the bow, staying out of sight. The braying 12.7mm guns seemed to be concentrating on the helm, the waterline, and the stern of the ship, most likely to destroy the controls and the propellers and stop the boat's retreat into international waters, as well as to kill anyone hiding out below decks. But the bow was still mostly shrouded in the dark shadows of the upper saloon and cockpit, and Gentry used this to mask his movement. He flipped the selector switch on the weapon to fully automatic, lined the 81's iron sights up on the spotlight beam, and slipped his finger into the trigger guard. In the brief pause he took to concentrate his senses before he fired, he noticed the deck below him was not moving forward in a straight line. No, he felt a very noticeable and very strong pull to the right of the 80-foot craft. He had no idea why, guessed only that the machine guns had already damaged the rudder. He pushed this out of his mind and pressed the trigger. The light exploded in a flash of sparks. Suddenly, the Fatima was enshrouded in darkness, and the gunboat across the water was the bright spot, as its windows and electric lighting exposed all the men on deck. Court fired the remainder of the first AK's magazine in full automatic mode at the men, killing two and sending the rest down.